Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, the European Central Bank is expected to cut interest rates tomorrow. That's good news for people who are on tracker mortgages. But what will it mean for those who are on variable and fixed rate mortgages? Now, this comes as a new survey from the Banking and Payments Federation says less than a third of mortgage holders have even considered switching. Brian Hayes is CEO of the Banking and Payments Federation and is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Claire.
So that question about whether this interest rate cut that we're expecting to see tomorrow, will it be passed on to variable and fixed rate customers?
Well, I suppose we've already seen changes in the Irish market as a consequence of the ECB rate reduction, which is down, as you say, about 50 basis points already. Although for tracker mortgage holders, Claire, there was a technical readjustment of another 0.4. So for tracker customers, which represents about 20% of the market, they're down close to a full 100 basis points or 1% this year alone. So the market responds to where the ECB rate rise. Obviously, it went from 0 to 4.5. It's gone down by 0.5 this year. If expectations are right, we'll have to wait and see. It'll be another 25 basis points tomorrow. And I think as monetary policy plays out, as inflation continues to fall and gets back to that 2% kind of target that the ECB have, we're going to continue to see rate reductions over the course of the next year.
So will the
if we
get the cut tomorrow, will people on variable rates in particular see the benefit of that?
Well, I think they're already seeing the benefit of it across the system. Even before the rate reduction happened pre-summer, you're beginning to see that. I think the point is, as rates went up, that 4.5% dramatic rise by the ECB, the facts are that the Irish lending community increased rates by about a third. We had the third lowest transmission in terms of the interest rate increase over the period. And I think that was done for two reasons. One, competition. Obviously, the competition is strong. But the other reason was Irish banks, Irish lenders in the retail sector, the entire market recognised the big inflationary problems that people faced, and they took that into consideration in terms of the third lowest transmission of the ECB rate.
So well,
as the rates
you might say that the banks are being very nice to us and have been in the past, but the fact is that Irish mortgage rates are very high by comparison to other European countries. We're the sixth highest out of 20.
Yeah, we're quite close to the European average. At the start of this process, we were much higher vis-a-vis other European rates. I think I've explained in your programme before, Claire, that one of the reasons why rates historically have been higher here, A, is the amount of capital that is held against Irish mortgages. B, is the issues around the whole question of security, of the enforcement of security, which is an issue. So I think over the course of the last number of years, in fairness to the lending community in this country, they've taken a very proportionate and balanced approach to the dramatic rise in ECB rates that people saw. Mm-hmm. And I think our issue is around making sure that we continue to have a good competition, a good landscape, good choice for people as consumers look to the best rates possible.
All right. Well, let's look at consumers now and what we're willing to do and not willing to do. This information that you're presenting today show that not many people even examine the options when it comes to switching.
Yeah, and I think what the research that we've had today, Claire, kind of tallies with what the ESRI have in their own research, and indeed the Central Bank of Ireland. I listened to Owen McGee on your show a lot, and he gives a lot of solid advice to people. Get out the old down Louie and the paper and write down what you're on and what you might go to by looking at different websites. And he's right about that. I think there is inertia. As Mary Harney said many years ago, and she was absolutely right, people need to shop around. There is significant choice in the market, notwithstanding the fact that we've lost two banks over the last number of years. We have, in this campaign that we're launching today, you know, it's underwritten by our members, AIB, Bank of Ireland, PTSB, Finance Ireland, ISM Mortgages, and Avant. And those different players recognise who are competing for business in the market that there is choice and there's difference.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's really interesting, Claire, is like if your loan to value improves, in other words, the value of your property goes down, but your loan has has reduced vis-a-vis the total size of the valuation of the loan. You know, there are different products there which could get you a different rate.
Yeah, the problem is, it's complicated and it's difficult.
Yes.
And you have to spend a lot of time at it because you're going to need a lot of information, aren't you, to switch. And that's probably what puts a lot of people off.
I hear you, Claire, and like that's why we've responded today. So two things we've done today, which is really, I think, which the industry, supported by our members, our lenders, have done. One is we put a new website out there today, which I think will answer some of those questions and the kind of documentation that you need. It's in yourinterest.ie. It's on our own website. It's a separate website. It goes through, the advantages of switching, if that's what you want to do, whether or not you're eligible. It also goes through the documents you need and lists all of the mortgage lenders that are there and independent advice with useful links. So that's one good thing. The other thing that I think we've done in getting agreement from the lending community is a new standardized salary certificate. So, this effectively means that anyone applying for a mortgage will only need one certificate completed by their employer, helping, I think, to streamline the whole application process. So that's another advantage that we've done. So I'd say to people, find out what you're on, because the survey that we
the rate that you're on
shows, people don't know what they're on a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just spend a bit of time going through the options that are there. A lot of money can be saved for people, and I think that's good for competition.
Okay. Now, earlier in the week, we were speaking to Lachlan Sir here, housing expert, about how to ramp up housing supply. One of the issues he has identified, and it has been spoken about before, is this difficulty when it comes to access to finance for house builders who are developing homes and estates on a smaller scale. The Business Post reported at the weekend that banks are taking a conservative approach to lending to house builders. Is it time for your members, for banks, to play a bigger role when it comes to financing the construction of homes?
Well, we want to play a bigger role, Claire. I think I was on your program only 2 or 3 weeks ago when we put forward a very concrete idea on how we think we can do more, particularly in the development lending space. We're curtailed by what's called RWA, risk-weighted assets, and it's a new concept introduced by our regulator, by EU rules, because the banks have to follow the rules, and those rules are very clear in terms of the amount of capital that banks have to hold for mortgage debt, but also for SME or development debt. So if I can just be very basic with you, for every 100 euro in Europe that a European bank gives to an SME to develop something, that European bank must hold 7 euro in capital, what's called CET1 capital. That capital in Ireland is 11, nearly 50% more. That's because our risk weighting in terms of density is significantly more for the SME loan book. So, that's part of the challenge we face as a sector, the amount of capital we've got to hold. Also, there's issues around concentration risk. A lot of the larger players who use our banks, we've only two PLCs, as you know, effectively. We need to see greater numbers and scale of developers out there. I think on the show recently, I highlighted that typically a bank will maybe lend about 65%. We expect some kind of the developer might pitch in 25-30%, and there's a gap that is very expensive in terms of mezzanine finance. So, we think a credit guarantee for that portion of the remaining debt could help to make some of those projects viable in the long run.
And Lorcan Sir pointed to the existing scheme, but he said it's very expensive for developers. But there was one other issue I wanted to ask you about before you go, because this is about Revolut. BBC Panorama did an investigation into complaints from customers of that organisation. They say, the people who complained, that the company's security services failed to stop fraudsters from taking very large amounts, in some cases, of money from their accounts. Now, Revolut say that they have robust controls to meet their legal and regulatory obligations. Now, there is more talk about more e-banks entering the Irish market. Do you think there's a greater need for regulation and supervision of these entities?
Well, I'm not going to comment on individual banks because, digital banks are banks like any other bank. They have to apply by the same rules and follow, as I'm sure they do, the same rules as everyone else, whether they're a bricks and mortar bank or whether they're just a digital bank or whether they're a combination, because our big banks like AIB, Bank of Ireland, PTSB, they're banks with branches, but they're also banks with call centres and obviously banks with significant investment in apps. So across the piece, the same rules must apply to everyone. It's that landscape question that I've spoken to you about before. So it's really important that regulators and supervisors ensure that everyone follows the same rules. I think the issue more generally, Claire, is around fraudsters are kind of one step ahead of the game constantly, and banks, be they a digital bank or be they a pillar bank, frequently, you know, put a lot of money into AI, put a lot of money into fraud prevention. We saw yesterday a national payments strategy announced by Minister Chambers, our Minister for Finance. We need to work closely as a sector with all other players. For instance, BPFI is chairing a new anti-fraud forum that's been established under this plan. And I think banks, you know, work closely with a lot of other providers. We'd like to do more. We'd like to have a shared fraud database, something we've been trying to get the government to agree for the last 4 years, but now it's in the plan, which is good. We also have looked, for instance, in the last number of years, working with Comreg and working with telcos, over 21 million phone calls have been prevented in terms of the scams. And I think in this case that you referred to earlier, it was a case of a hoax fraudster, mm-hmm. and that person giving information. And I think we have, as an industry, called fraudsmart.ie. It's a website, really practical information for people. And I'd say to people, never click on a link in terms of a text message. And banks will never ring you looking for your personal information.
Yep.
If someone rings you, you know, you have a telephone number for your bank card, ring the bank and let them know,
yep.
because they have personnel and people there to deal with those issues.
Unfortunately, though, we know people, for various reasons, whatever else might be going on in their lives on that particular day, tend to very unfortunately fall prey to those scams.
Yeah.
Brian Hayes, thank you for being with us on the programme, CEO of the Banking and Payments Federation.